Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. The information we present is taken from the writings of Benjamin Krem, a disciple of a Master of Wisdom, and also from teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. We include teachings from many schools of thought to demonstrate how they are working out in the world. Our articles are often inspiring. We hope to inform the public of actions taken around the globe to improve conditions for us all and to find means of addressing some of our most pressing problems.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome, a wonderful warm welcome to our regular Friday program. Our article this morning comes from the September Share magazine, Share International magazine, that is, and it's the September 1, and it's called How Working Class Movements Are Moving Beyond the Confines of Capitalism. Between the fall of 1999 and April 2000, hundreds of thousands of factory workers, peasants, retirees, students, professionals, and everyday people took to the streets in Cochabamba, Bolivia, to fight the privatization of their water. A foreign-led consortium of private corporations had taken control of the city's water supply, increasing water prices by as much as 300%, with the skills and experience of organized movements such as the Federation of Factory Workers, working people were able to defeat a multi-billion dollar corporation around a shared interest, the right to water.
In the face of a well-organized global elite that has gutted the power of workplace organizing, Cochabamba shows us that organizing the working class around a common interest and moving beyond the confines of the workplace provides an opening to push for and win a future that centers people over profit.
Capitalism began to take on a new form in the 1970s with the arrival of new technologies that facilitated the rapid transportation of goods and communication about the production process. Neoliberalism, a policy framework that enriches the wealthy by cutting taxes and that demeans workers by cutting opportunities and access to social wages, came to define the social global social economy. The world was now connected in a way that enabled global capitalists to break up the production process, making it even more difficult for organized masses of working people to halt the production process and garner real power over the ruling elite. Now that the manufacturing of parts of the production process was spread across the world, the shutdown of a factory that manufactures car engines in China could easily be offset by the production of car engines in Mexico or Taiwan.
Vijay Prasad, director of Tricontinental Institute for Social Research, explains that new technologies such as satellite communications, computerization, and container ships provided firms with the ability to manage global real-time databases and to move goods as fast as possible. Firms could break up factories and set them up in several countries at the same time, a process known as the disarticulation of production. Advances in transportation further enabled this process so that capital could move the parts of the commodities swiftly and relatively cheaply as well as shift commodities to markets with relative ease.
This scenario is vastly different from the power generated, for example, by auto workers in Detroit in the mid-20th century, who were able to shut down the entire production process through strikes and slowdowns, and whose benefits and union contracts reflect the level of power they were able to exercise over their employers. Factories that were once the heart of the auto industry and the site of powerful worker organizing are now largely abandoned. their broken windows and crumbling walls, a mirror of the changing landscape of production and the need for different strategies to organise around it.
The context for organising today that faces working people across the world is one that must grapple with the challenges posed by a decentralised production process and a well-organised ruling class. We can see the current moment as a rupture of sorts, perhaps a way of understanding the global rise of fascism, scapegoating in the form of xenophobia, racism and religious fundamentalism, the well-worn tools of capitalism's strategy to divide the working class, fills an ideological void and presents a solution to the anger stoked by the everyday realities of the working class, who are faced with massive inequality and pauperisation.
It is to this anger that the left must respond, to provide an ideology that seeks to understand its origins and to shape cultural mechanisms and ideologies that allow us to imagine and build a different path forward. The Centre of Indian Trade Unions, CITU, presents one such path. In a recent interview, CITU President K. Hemalata discussed both the challenges that lie ahead of working class movements, as well as some of the strategies that are being used to combat them. Hemalata points to the same trend of the disarticulation of production, that workers do not produce the entire product. Often they produce just a part of the commodity. She explains that this means that the workers are not concentrated in one factory where they can get organized. Rather, they are working on just a part of the commodity, spatially separated from fellow workers, and have less power because of this.
Another major problem, she explains, is the use of migrant labour to create social fissures amongst the workers and surrounding communities. Often, workers from one state are loaded onto a bus to a factory elsewhere, where they have no ties to the community and often do not speak the same language. This trend is mirrored in the forced migration of those fleeing violence in Central America in search of safety and economic opportunity in the United States. Migrants who succeed in their passage to the United States are often blamed for the woes of the broader working class for stealing jobs, deflecting the blame from the capitalist class for keeping all wages low and for having created the unstable conditions in their home countries through foreign policy interventions.
Despite the shared interest between the community and the workers and between divided sectors of the working class who are forced to accept low wages and often precarious conditions, these divisions often succeed in creating social fractures that reinforce the interests of the ruling class. One strategy used by CITU to combat these social fractures is to organise people in their residential areas and not just at places of production, says Hemalata. In the South Indian state of Kerala, for example, the Left Democratic Front offers Malayalam language classes for the migrant workers, which allows them to develop closer ties with people who live beside their places of work and in their neighbourhoods. If you provide workers with the means to enter the society where they work, then the divides cannot be so easily exploited by management.
The challenges posed by global capital require creativity in their solutions. We must rebuild the imagination of the working class and combat the capitalist narrative that has made it easier for us to imagine the end of the world and the end of capitalism. Before a new system can be born, its seeds must be planted and nurtured in the fissures of our current reality. We must build and popularise an ideology and culture that offer a solution other than hate and scapegoating to the woes experienced by the poor and dispossessed, and amplify the theories and strategies that exist among popular movements today.
This requires confronting the consumer-driven culture and social isolation promoted by capitalism and building one that revives community and humanity, that centres the well-being of humanity over the accumulation of wealth at the hands of the few. The seeds of the future exist in the strategies of CITU in India, in the worker cooperatives in Brazil, in the housing struggles in South Africa, and in countless other popular movements across the world. These are the wrenches that can halt the wheels of the well-oiled machine of capital, and the source for this is from commondreams.org.
Our last article in today's program is titled Knock Down the House, and in brackets, Ordinary People Can Do Extraordinary Things. and it's a review of a video documentary by Dominique Abdelnoir. Rachel Lear's exciting documentary, Knock Down the House, tells the story of four ordinary young American women revealing the power of dedication and sincerity in confronting the Democratic Party. The film follows four progressive women who ran primary campaigns against established centrist Democrats in the USA 2018 midterm elections. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in New York, Amy Villela in Nevada, Cori Bush in Missouri, and Paula Jean Swearengen in West Virginia. The film shows these young women preparing for a primary election. In a stark contrast to the usual image of politicians designed by communication consultants.
The viewer is immediately engaged, hoping that their sincerity will bring change by touching people's hearts. In 2018, a record number of women and people of color set out to transform Congress. They challenged the establishment and big money politicians in a Congress composed mostly of white men, millionaires, and lawyers. They were backed by the progressive political organizations, Brand New Congress and Justice Democrats, which aimed to give power back to the people. The candidates were selected from a list of more than 10,000 crowdsourced candidate nominations. If we elect working people will have representation in Congress.
The film is a demonstration that courageous, determined women can rise and change politics, that being honest and sincere can be a powerful argument to help win an election. It is about almost ordinary women dropping their lives to start an adventure to change the country, to change the lives of many. It is about removing the corrupting influence of money in politics, about giving power back to the people. Their language is simple and forceful.
In Knock Down the House, we see Paula Jean Swearengen running for Senate in West Virginia against Senator Joe Manchin, who has earned millions in assets from coal companies. Paula Jean is the daughter of a coal miner. Driving on the road through Coal City, she points out houses where people died of cancer and denounces self-serving politicians catering to coal barons instead of caring for the community. If another country came down here, blew up our mountains, poisoned our water, we'd go to war. But industry can. No American should have to beg for a clean glass of water. It's time for ordinary people to do extraordinary things.
Cori Bush runs for Congress in Missouri's 1st District. She is a registered nurse, ordained pastor, and mother of two teenagers. She became an activist when she volunteered to provide medical assistance during the Ferguson protests. That was after the police shot dead unarmed teenager Michael Brown. She comes out of her simple house carrying some laundry. We drive along the streets with her, children playing in the streets amongst deserted factories. The county has been represented by William Clay and his son Lacey since 1969. No other Democrat has had the guts to run against them.
Amy Villela runs for Congress in Nevada's 4th District. 2 years before she decided to run for office, her 22-year-old daughter, Shaylin, developed blood clot symptoms. She was refused a medical test because she had no insurance. Shortly afterwards, she suffered a pulmonary embolism and died. This happens to 30,000 families a year. They are losing loved ones because they don't have insurance, because CEOs are figuring out how to maximize profits for their shareholders. She quit her job, sold her house, borrowed money, and ran against former Congressman Stephen Horsford, who had recently worked at a lobbying firm. Refusing to take corporate money, she supported the right of women to choose and Medicare for all.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez ran in the Bronx. We see her filling a bucket of ice in a restaurant, working as a bartender as she speaks. We see her canvassing door to door. The fundamental question is, why you? Because nobody is doing it. Ocasio-Cortez's discourse is very articulate and strong. She says, "We are running to organize, we are running to redefine the political landscape in New York City. We are not running to make a statement, we are running to win. Americans are not asking for a lot, they are asking to get by. They are just asking for politicians to be brave enough to help them get by." She explains why she struggles to get 10,000 signatures when only 1,250 are required. Her opponents would exploit any slight difference in a signature to cancel it and would then cancel the ballot for lack of signatures.
The film shows how with tireless canvassing and genuine community engagement, a young working-class woman from the Bronx was able to take on one of the most powerful Democrats in Washington. On her leaflet, her program is quite clear. End the war on drugs. 100% renewable energy. Tuition-free public college. Medicare for all. Corporate money out of politics. $15 minimum wage, AOC explains. Women like me are not supposed to run for Congress, but big money is very lonely and we have people on our side. Due to her social background and lack of political experience, her opponent underestimated her and certainly did not understand the aspiration of the people.
In one of the last scenes of the film, screams of excitement fill her supporters' room when she wins the primary. As the Bronx is 85% Democratic, she was assured of winning the seat in Congress. In due course, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was the only one of the four to win a seat. She says, "It is just reality. For one of us to get through, 100 have to try." Even though these women did not all win a seat, their dedication helped move their ideas to the forefront of the political debate and gave hope to many. The film stresses that with the support of the people, working class people can and should run for office to bring working class issues to the fore. Hard though it is, non-professional politicians can win against the establishment and against big money politicians.
An honest message can be more powerful than the skilled stonewalling of political or of typical politicians. In 2018, women led the way to victory for House Democrats. 528 women ran for Congress. 42 joined Congress in 2019. They won more than 60% of the seats that Democrats took in what some termed the Year of the Woman. There are now 102 women in the House, the largest number in U.S. history. And the source for this is from Jacobin, Knock Down the House on Netflix, and also the New York Times.
We have time to read to you a message from Maitreya from the book Messages from Maitreya the Christ, and this is message number message number 57. My dear friends, I am happy to be with you once more. With the year 1979 began a new phase of mankind's life. My presence is producing such changes that no one but the most blind will shortly deny my existence among you. My work proceeds smoothly and well, and all aspects of my plan are being fulfilled. Nevertheless, there still is much to do, and I would set you therefore this task. Tell men everywhere that you believe that the teacher for mankind is among them. Tell them what you know of my plans and projects, and illumine their lives. Send my words throughout the world and reach the hearts of your brothers. Help them too to share in a great manifestation of God's love, and awaken them to the promise of the future. Do this for me, my friends, and you will do a deed of which forever you may be proud.
The central point of my plan is to evoke in men the desire to share, for on this principle all else rests. Sharing, my friends, is an attribute to God, of God. To become the gods which you are, this principle must govern your lives. Allow me to remind you of this simple truth once again and show you the path to the future. My blessing goes with you all. May the divine light and love and power of the one most holy God be now manifest within your hearts and minds. May this manifestation allow you to teach the truth to all you meet.
Thank you very much for listening. That's the end of our program for today. If you would like more information, check out the website share-international.org, or you could write to us at sharenz@yahoo.com. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.